The Great Gilly Hopkins by Katherine Patterson. Chapter 1. Welcome to Thompson Park. Gilly, said Miss Ellis with a shake of her long blonde hair toward the passenger in the back seat, I need to feel that you are willing to make some effort. Galadriel Hopkins shifted her bubblegum to the front of her mouth and began to blow gently. She blew until she could hardly see the shape of the social worker's head through the pink bubble. This will be your third home in less than 3 years. Miss Ellis swept her golden head left to right and then began to turn the wheel in a cautious maneuver to the left. I would be the last person to say that it was all your fault. The Dixons moved to Florida, for example. Just one of those unfortunate things. And Mrs. Richmond having to go into the hospital. It seemed to Gilly that there was a long, thoughtful pause before the caseworker went on. For her nerves. Pop! Miss Ellis flinched and glanced in the rearview mirror, but continued to talk in her calm, professional voice while Gilly picked at the bits of gum stuck in her straggly bangs and on her cheeks and chin. We should have been more alert to her condition before placing any foster child there. I should have been more alert. Cripes, thought Gilly. The woman was getting sincere. What a pain. I'm not trying to blame you, Gilly. It's just that we all need your cooperation if any kind of arrangement is to work out. Another pause. I can't imagine you enjoy all this moving around. The blue eyes in the mirror were checking out Gilly's response. Now, this new foster mother is very different from Mrs. Nevins. Gilly calmly picked a blob of gum off the end of her nose. There was no use trying to get the gum out of her hair. She sat back and tried to chew the bit she had managed to salvage. It stuck to her teeth in a thin layer. She fished another ball of gum from her jeans pocket and scraped the lint off with her thumbnail before elaborately popping it into her mouth. Will you do me a favor, Gilly? Try to get off on the right foot. Gilly had a vision of herself sailing around the living room of the foster home on her right foot like an ice skater. With her uplifted left foot, she was shoving the next foster mother square in the mouth. She smacked her new supply of gum in satisfaction. Do me another favor, will you? Get rid of that bubble gum before we get there. Gilly obligingly took the gum out of her mouth while Miss Ellis's eyes were still in the mirror. Then, when the social worker turned her attention back to the traffic, Gilly carefully spread the gum under the handle of the left-hand door as a sticky surprise for the next person who might try to open it. Two traffic lights farther on, Miss Ellis handed back a towelette. Here, she said, see what you can do about that gook on your face before we get there. Gilly swiped the little wet paper across her mouth and dropped it on the floor. Gilly, Miss Ellis sighed and shifted her fancy on the floor gears. Gilly, my name, Gilly said between her teeth, is Galadriel. Miss Ellis appeared not to have heard. Gilly, give Mamie Trotters half a chance, okay? She's really a nice person. That cans it, thought Gilly. At least nobody had accused Mr. and Mrs. Nevins, her most recent foster parents, of being nice. Mrs. Richmond, the one with the bad nerves, had been nice. The Newman family, who couldn't keep a five-year-old who wet her bed, had been nice. Well, I'm 11 now, folks, and in case you haven't heard, I don't wet my bed anymore. But I am not nice. I am brilliant. I am famous across this entire county. Nobody wants to tangle with the great Galadriel Hopkins. I am too clever and too hard to manage. Gruesome Gilly, they call me. She leaned back comfortably. Here I come, Mamie baby, ready or not. They had reached a neighborhood of huge trees and old houses. The social worker slowed and stopped beside a dirty white fence. The house it penned was old and brown with a porch that gave it a sort of potbelly. Standing on the porch before she rang the bell, Miss Ellis took out a comb. Would you try to pull this through your hair? Gilly shook her head. Can't. Oh, come on, Gilly. No, can't comb my hair. I'm going for the Guinness record for uncombed hair. Gilly, for Pete's sake. Hey there, I thought I heard y'all pull up. The door had opened and a huge hippopotamus of a woman was filling the doorway. Welcome to Thompson Park, Gilly, honey. Galadriel, muttered Gilly. Not that she expected this bale of blubber to manage her real name. Geez, they didn't have to put her in with a freak. Half a small face, topped with muddy brown hair and mashed with thick metal-rimmed glasses, jutted out from behind Mrs. Trotter's mammoth hip. The woman looked down. Well, excuse me, honey. She put her arm around the head as if to draw it forward, but the head resisted movement. You want to meet your new sister, don't you? Gilly, this is William Ernest Teague. The head immediately disappeared behind Mrs. Trotter's bolt. She didn't seem bothered. Come in. I don't mean to leave you standing on the porch like you was trying to sell me something. You belong here now. She backed up. Gilly could feel Miss Ellis's fingers on her backbone gently prodding her through the doorway and into the house. Inside, it was dark and crammed with junk. Everything seemed to need dusting. William Ernest, honey, you want to show Gilly where her room is? William Ernest clung to the back of Mrs. Trotter's flowered house dress, shaking his head. Oh, well, we can see to that later. She led them down the hallway to a living room. Just sit down and make yourself at home now. She smiled all across her face at Gilly, like the after in a magazine diet ad. A before body with an after smile. The couch was brown and squat, with a pile of cushions covered in graying lace at the far end. A matching brown chair with worn arms slumped at the opposite side of the room. Gray lace curtains hung at the single window between them. And beside the window was a black table supporting an old-time TV set with rabbit ears. The Nevinses had had color TV. On the right-hand wall between the door and the brown chair stood a black upright piano with a dusty brown bench. Gilly took one of the pillows off the couch and used it to wipe every trace of dust off the piano bench before sitting down on it. From the brown chair, Miss Ellis was staring at her with a very non-professional glare. Mrs. Trotter was lowering herself to the sofa and chuckling. Well, we've been needing somebody to rearrange the dust around here. Ain't we, William Ernest, honey? William Ernest climbed up behind the huge woman and lay behind her back like a bolster pillow, poking his head around from time to time to sneak another look at Gilly. She waited until Mrs. Trotter and Miss Ellis were talking, then gave little W.E., the most fearful face in all her repertory of scary looks, sort of a cross between Count Dracula and Godzilla. The little muddy head disappeared faster than a toothpaste cap down a sink drain. She giggled despite herself. Both of the women turned to look at her. She switched easily immediately to her, "Who, me look?" Miss Ellis stood up. "I need to be getting back to the office, Mrs. Trotter. You'll let me know." She turned to Gilly with prickles in her big blue eyes. "You'll let me know if there are any problems." Gilly favored Miss Ellis with her best barracuda smile. Meanwhile, Mrs. Trotter was laboriously hefting herself to her feet. "Don't worry, Miss Ellis. Gilly and William Ernest and me is nearly friends already. My Melvin, God rest him, used to say that Trotter never met a stranger. And if he said kid, he would have been right. I never met a kid I couldn't make friends with." Gilly hadn't learned yet how to vomit at will, but if she had, she would have dearly loved to throw up on that one. So, lacking the truly perfect response, she lifted her legs and spun around to the piano, where she proceeded to bang out Heart and Soul with her left hand and Chopsticks with her right. William Ernest scrambled off the couch after the two women, and Gilly was left alone with the dust, the out-of-tune piano, and the satisfaction that she had indeed started off on the right foot in her new foster home. She could stand anything, she thought, a gross guardian, a freaky kid, an ugly, dirty house. As long as she was in charge, she was well on the way. The Man Who Comes to Supper. The room that Mrs. Trotter took Gilly to was about the size of the Nevinses' news station wagon. The narrow bed filled up most of the space, and even someone as skinny as Gilly had to kneel on the bed in order to pull out the drawers of the bureau opposite it. Mrs. Trotter didn't even try to come in. just stood in the doorway, slightly swaying and smiling, her breath short from climbing the stairs. "Why don't you just put your things away in the bureau and get yourself settled? Then when you feel like it, you can come on down and watch TV with William Ernest, or come talk to me while I'm fixing supper." What an awful smile she had, Gilly thought. She didn't even have all her teeth. Gilly dropped her suitcase on the bed and sat down beside it, kicking the bureau drawers with her toes. "You need anything, honey, just let Trotter know, okay?" Gilly jerked her head in a nod. What she needed was to be left alone. From the bowels of the house, she could hear the theme song from Sesame Street. Her first job would be to improve W.E.'s taste in TV. That was for sure. "It's going to be okay, honey. I know it's been hard to switch around so much." "I like moving," Gilly jerked one of the top drawers so hard it nearly came out onto her head. "It's boring to stay in one place." "Yeah." The big woman started to turn and then hesitated. "Well..." Gilly slid off the bed and put her left hand on the doorknob and stuck her right hand on her hip. Mrs. Trotter glanced down at the hand on the knob. "Well, make yourself at home. You hear now?" Gilly slammed the door after her. God, listening to that woman was like licking melted ice cream off the carton. She tested the dust on top of the bureau and then, standing on the bed, wrote in huge cursive curlicues, "Ms. Galadriel Hopkins." She stared at the lovely letters she had made for a moment before slapping down her open palm in the middle of them and rubbing them all away. The Nevinsons' house had been square and white and dustless, just like every other square, white, dustless house in the treeless development where they had lived. She had been the only thing in the neighborhood out of place. Well, Hollywood Gardens was spotless once more. They'd got rid of her. No, she'd got rid of them, the whole stinking lot. Unpacking even just the few things in her brown suitcase always seemed a waste of time to Gilly. She never knew if she'd be in a place long enough to make it worth the bother. And yet it was something to fill the time. There were two little drawers at the top and four larger ones below. She put her underwear in one of the little ones and her shirts and jeans in one of the big ones and then picked up the photograph from the bottom of the suitcase. Out of the pasteboard frame and through the plastic cover, the brown eyes of the woman laughed up at her as they always did. The glossy black hair hung in gentle waves without a hair astray. She looked as though she was a star of some TV show, but she wasn't. See, right there in the corner she had written, "For my beloved Galadriel, I will always love you." She wrote that to me, Gilly told herself, as she did every time she looked at it. Only to me. She turned the frame over. It was still there, the little piece of tape with the name on it. Courtney Rutherford Hopkins. Gilly smoothed her own straw-colored hair with one hand as she turned the picture over again. Even the teeth were gorgeous. Weren't girls supposed to look like their mothers? The word mother triggered something deep in her stomach. She knew the danger signal. Abruptly, she shoved the picture under the t-shirt and banged the bureau drawer shut. This was not the time to start dissolving like hot jello. She went downstairs. "There you are, honey." Trotter turned away from the sink to greet her. "How about giving me a hand here with this salad?" "No." "Oh." Score a point for Gilly. "Well," Trotter shifted her weight to her left foot, keeping her eyes on the carrot she was scraping. "William Ernest is in the living room watching Sesame Street." "My God, you must think I'm mental or something." "Mental?" Trotter moved to the kitchen table and started chopping the carrots on a tiny round board. "Dumb, stupid. Never crossed my mind." "Then why the hell you think I'm going to watch some retard show like that?" "Listen here, Gilly Hopkins, one thing we better get straight right now tonight. I won't have you making fun of that boy." "I wasn't making fun of that boy." What was the woman talking about? She hadn't mentioned the boy. "Just because someone isn't quite as smart as you are, don't give you no right to look down on them." "Who am I looking down on?" "You just said..." The fat woman's voice was rising, and her knife was crashing down on the carrots with vengeance. "You just said that William Ernest was..." Her voice dropped to a whisper. "Retarded." "I did not. I don't even know the stupid kid. I never saw him in my life before today. Trotter's eyes were still flashing, but her hand and voice were under control. He's had a rough time of it in this world, but he's with Trotter now, and as long as the Lord leaves him in this house, ain't nobody on earth going to hurt him in any way. Good God, all I was trying to say. One more thing. In this house, we don't take the Lord's name in vain. Gilly threw both her hands up in mock surrender. All right, forget it. She started for the door. Supper's about ready. How about going next door and getting Mr. Randolph? He eats here nights. The word no was just about to pop out of Gilly's mouth, but one look at Trotter's eyes and she decided to save her fight for something more important. Which house? The gray one on the right. She waved her knife vaguely uphill. Just knock on the door. If you do it good and loud, he'll hear you. Better take your jacket. Cold out. Gilly ignored the last. She ran out the door, through the picket gate, and onto the porch next door, stomping and jumping to keep warm. Bam, bam, bam. It was too cold for October. Mr. Randolph's house was smaller and more grubby-looking even than Trotter's. She repeated her knock. Suddenly, the door swung inward, revealing a tiny, shrunken man. Strange, whitish eyes stared out of a wrinkled brown face. Gilly took one look and ran back to Trotter's kitchen as fast as she could. What's the matter? Where's Mr. Randolph? I don't know. He's gone. He's not there. What do you mean he's not there? Trotter began wiping her hands on her apron and walking toward the door. He's gone. Some weird little colored man with white eyes came to the door. Gilly, that was Mr. Randolph. He can't see a thing. You've got to go back and bring him by the hand so he won't fall. Gilly backed away. I never touched one of those people in my life. Well, then, it's about time, ain't it? Trotter snapped. Of course, if you can't manage, I can always send William Ernest. I can manage. Don't you worry about me. You probably got Mr. Randolph all confused and upset by now. Well, you should have warned me. Warned you? Trotter banged a spoon on the table. I should have warned poor Mr. Randolph. You want me to send William Ernest? I said I could manage. Good God. At this, Trotter's spoon went up in the air like a fly swatter. All right, I didn't say it. Hell, a person can't even talk around here. A smart person like you ought to be able to think of a few regular words to stick in amongst the cusses. The spoon went into the salad and stirred. Well, hurry up if you're going. The little black man was still standing in the open doorway. William Ernest, he called gently as Gilly started up the steps. No, she said sharply. Me. Oh, he smiled widely, although his eyes did not seem to move. You must be the new little girl. He stretched out his right hand. Welcome to you. Welcome. Gilly carefully took the elbow instead of the hand. Trotter said for me to get you for supper. Well, thank you, thank you. He reached behind, fumbling until he found the knob and pulled the door shut. Kind of chilly tonight, isn't it? Yeah. All she could think of was Miss Ellis. Okay, so she hadn't been so great at the Demonses, but she hadn't done anything to deserve this. A house run by a fat, fluff-brained religious fanatic with a mentally retarded 7-year-old. Well, maybe he was, and maybe he wasn't actually retarded. But chances were good the kid was running around with less than his full share of brains, or why would Trotter make such a big deal of it? But she could have handled the two of them. It wasn't fair to throw in a blind black man who came to eat. Or maybe Miss Ellis didn't know. Maybe Trotter kept this a secret. The sidewalk was uneven. Mr. Randolph's toe hit a high corner, and he lurched forward. Watch it! Without thinking, Gilly threw her arms around the thin shoulders and caught him before he fell. Thank you, thank you. Gilly dropped her arms. She thought for a horrible moment that he was going to try to grab her hand, but he didn't. Boy, Miss Ellis, are you ever going to be sorry you did this to me? Now, Mrs. Trotter did tell me your name, but I'm ashamed to say I don't seem to recall it. He tapped his head with its short, curly gray hair. I can keep all the luxuries up here, but none of the necessities. Gilly, she muttered. I beg your pardon? Gilly Hopkins. Oh, yes. He was shuffling painfully up Trotta's front steps. Geez, why didn't he get a white cane or something? I am most pleased to make your acquaintance, Miss Gilly. I feel mighty close to all Miss Trotta's children. Little William Ernest is like a grandson to me, so I feel sure. Watch the door! Yes, yes, I thank you. Is that you, Mr. Randolph? Came Trotta's voice from inside. Yes, indeed, Mrs. Trotter, with the sweetest little escort you'd ever hope to see. Trotter appeared in the hallway with her hands on her hips. How are you doing in this cold weather? Not my best, I'm afraid. This sweet little girl had to keep me from falling right down on my face. Did she now? See there, Trotter? I managed. I guess this old house is going to be a bit more lively now, eh, Mrs. Trotter? Wouldn't be surprised, answered Trotter in a flat voice that Gilly couldn't read the meaning of. The meal proceeded without incident. Gilly was hungry, but thought it better not to seem to enjoy her supper too much. William Ernest ate silently and steadily, with only an occasional glance at Gilly. She could tell that the child was scared silly of her. It was about the only thing in the last 2 hours that had given her any real satisfaction. Power over the boy was sure to be power over Trotter in the long run. I declare, Mrs. Trotter, said Mr. Randolph, every day I think to myself, tonight's supper couldn't be as delicious as last night's. But I tell you, this is the most delicious meal I have ever had the privilege of eating. Mr. Randolph, you could flatter the stripe off a polecat. Mr. Randolph let out a giggling laugh. It isn't flattery, I assure you, Mrs. Trotter. William Ernest and Miss Gilly will bear me out in this. I may be old, but I haven't lost my sense of taste, even if some folks maintain I've lost the other four. They went on and on like that, Mr. Randolph flattering the fat woman, and the fat woman eating it up like hot fudge sundae with all the nuts. What I should do, thought Gilly, as she lay that night in the narrow bed, with her arms folded under her head, what I should do is write my mother, Courtney Rutherford Hopkins would probably sue county welfare if she knew what kind of place they forced her daughter to come to. Miss Ellis, whose eyebrows always twitch when Gilly asked questions about Courtney, had once told her that Courtney was from Virginia. Everybody knew, didn't they, that families like Courtney's did not eat with colored people? Courtney Rutherford Hopkins was sure to go into a rage, wasn't she, when she heard that news? Perhaps the self-righteous Trotter would be put into jail for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Miss Ellis would, of course, be fired. Yum. She'll come to get me then, for sure, thought Gilly. Her mother wouldn't stand for her beautiful Galadriel to be in a dump like this for one single minute, once she knew. But how was she to know? Miss Ellis would never admit it. What kind of lies was the social worker telling Courtney to keep her from coming to fetch Gilly? As she dropped off to sleep, Gilly promised herself for the millionth time that she would find out where Courtney Rutherford Hopkins was, write to her, and tell her to come and take her beautiful Caladriel home. More unpleasant surprises. In the tiny mirror over the bureau, Gilly noted with no little satisfaction that her hair was a wreck. Yesterday, before the bubblegum got into it, it had looked as though it simply needed combing. Today, it looked like a lot that had been partially bulldozed, an uprooted tree here, a half wall with a crumbling chimney there. It was magnificent. It would run Trotter wild. Gilly bounced down the stairs and into the kitchen. She held her head very straight as she sat at the kitchen table and waited for the fireworks. I'll take you down to the school a little after 9, here, Trotter said. Of course, Gilly heard. She tilted her head a little in case Trotter couldn't see. If I take you down earlier, Trotter went on, we'll just have to sit and wait till they can take care of us. I'd as leave sit here at my own table with a cup of coffee, wouldn't you? She put a bowl of steaming hot cereal down in front of Gilly. Gilly nodded her head vigorously, yes. William Ernest was staring at her, his glasses steamed up from the oatmeal. Gilly bared her teeth and shook her head violently, no, at him. The boy snuffled loudly and ducked his head. Need a tissue, William Ernest? Trotter pulled one from her apron pocket and gently wiped his nose. And here's a clean one for school, honey. Trotter leaned over and tucked a tissue into its pants pocket. Gilly craned her neck over the table as though she were trying to see the contents of W.E.'s pocket. Her head was within a couple of feet of Trotter's eyes. The woman was sure to notice. William Ernest got promoted to the Orange Reading Group yesterday. Didn't you, William Ernest, honey? The little boy nodded his head but kept his eyes on his bowl. You're going to have to do some reading out loud and show Gilly how great you're coming along with your reading these days. W.E. looked up for one split second with terror in his eyes. Trotter missed the look, but not Gilly, who smiled widely and shook her half-bulldozed head emphatically. In Orange, they use hardback books, Trotter was explaining. It's a real big step to be Orange. She leaned over Gilly to put some toast on the table. We really worked for this. So old W.E.'s getting ahead, is he? Trotter gave her a puzzled look. Yeah, he's doing just fine. Before you know it, Gilly heard herself saying loudly, he'll be blowing his own nose and combing his own hair. He already does, said Trotter quietly. Leastways, most of the time. She sat down with a loud sigh at the table. Pass me a piece of toast, will you, Gilly? Gilly picked up the plate, raised it to the height of her hair, and passed it across to Trotter at that level. Thank you, honey. At 8:30, Trotter got William Ernest off to school. Gilly had long since finished her breakfast, but she sat at the kitchen table, her head propped on her fists. From the doorway, she could hear Old Mother Goose honking over her goslings. Okay, Big Orange, you show 'em down there today, hear? Trotter said finally, and then the heavy door shut, and she was heading back for the kitchen. As she got to the door, Gilly sat up straight and shook her head for all she was worth. You got a tick or something, honey? No. I would have thought you was too young for the palsy, the huge woman murmured, sliding into her seat with the cup of coffee she promised herself earlier. I see you got sneakers. That's good. You're supposed to have them for gym. Can you think of anything else you'll need for school? Gilly shook her head, but half-heartedly. She was beginning to feel like an over-sharpened pencil. I think I'll go upstairs till it's time, she said. Oh, why you're up there, honey? Yeah, Gilly sprung to attention. Make the beds, will you? It does look messy to leave them unmade all day, and not much on running up and down the stairs. Gilly banged the door to her room for all she was worth. She spit every obscenity she had ever heard through her teeth, but it wasn't enough. That's ignorant hippopotamus, that walrus-faced imbecile, oh, the devil. Trotter wouldn't even let a drop fall from her precious William Ernest baby's nose. But she would let Gilly go to school, a new school where she didn't know anybody, looking like a scarecrow. Miss Ellis would surely hear about this. Gilly slammed her fist into her pillow. There had to be a law against foster mothers who showed such gross favoritism. Well, she would show that lard can a thing or two. She yanked open the left top drawer, pulling out a broken comb, which she viciously jerked through the wilderness on her head, only to be defeated by a patch of bubblegum. She ran into the bathroom and rummaged through the medicine cabinet until she found a pair of nail scissors with which to chop out the offending hair. When, despite her assault by comb and scissors, a few strands refused to lie down meekly, she soaked them mercilessly into submission. She'd show the world. She'd show them who Galadriel Hopkins was. She was not to be trifled with. I see they call you Gilly, said Mr. Evans, the principal. I can't even pronounce the poor child's real name, said Trotter, chuckling in what she must believe was a friendly manner. It didn't help Gilly's mood. She was still seething over the hair combing. Well, Gilly's a fine name, said Mr. Evans, which confirmed to Gilly that at school, too, she was fated to be surrounded by fools. The principal was studying records that must have been sent over from Gilly's former school, Hollywood Gardens Elementary. He coughed several times. Well, he said, I think this young lady needs to be in a class that will challenge her. She's plenty smart, if that's what you mean. Trotter, you dummy. How do you know how smart I am? You never laid eyes on me until yesterday. I'm going to put you into Miss Harris's class. We have some departmentalization in the sixth grade, but you got what in the sixth grade? Oh, Trotter, shut your fool mouth. But the principal didn't seem to notice what a dope Trotter was. He explained patiently how some of the sixth grade classes moved around for math and reading and science, but Miss Harris kept the same group all day. What a blinking bore. They went up three flights of ancient stairway to Miss Harris's room slowly so that Trotter would not collapse. The corridors stank of oiled floors and cafeteria soup. Gilly had thought she hated all schools so much that they no longer would pain or disappoint her, but she felt heavier with each step, like a condemned prisoner walking an endless last mile. They paused before the door marked Harris 6. Mr. Evans knocked, and a tall, tea-colored woman, crowned with a bush of black hair, opened the door. She smiled down on the three of them, because she was even taller than the principal. Gilly shrank back, bumping into Trotter's huge breast, which made her jump forward again quickly. God, on top of everything else, the teacher was black. No one seemed to take notice of her reaction, unless you counted a flash of brightness in Miss Harris's dark eyes. Trotter patted Gilly's arm, murmured something that ended in honey, and then she and the principal floated backward, closing Gilly into Harris 6. The teacher led her to an empty desk in the middle of the classroom, asked for Gilly's jacket, which she handed over to another girl to hang on the coat rack at the back of the room. She directed Gilly to sit down and then went up and settled herself at the large teacher's desk to glance through the handful of papers Mr. Evans had given her. In a moment, she looked up, a warm smile lighting her face. Galadriel Hopkins, what a beautiful name. From Tolkien, of course. No, muttered Gilly. Hollywood Gardens. Miss Harris laughed a sort of golden laugh. No, I mean your name, Galadriel. It's the name of a great queen in a book by the man named Tolkien. But of course you know that. Hell, no one had ever told her that her name came from a book. Should she pretend she knew all about it or play dumb? I'd like to call you Galadriel, if you don't mind. It's such a lovely name. No! Everyone was looking at Gilly peculiarly. She must have yelled louder than she intended to. I would prefer, she said tightly, to be called Gilly. Yes, Miss Harris's voice was more steel than gold now. Yes, Gilly, it is then. Well, she turned to smile on the rest of the class, where were we? The clamor of their answers clashed in Gilly's brain. She started to put her head down on the desk, but someone was shoving a book into her face. It wasn't fair. Nothing was fair. She had once seen a picture in an old book of a red fox on a high rock surrounded by snarling dogs. It was like that. She was smarter than all of them, but they were too many. They had her surrounded, and in their stupid ways, they were determined to wear her down. Miss Harris was leaning over her. Gilly pulled away as far as she could. Did you do division with fractions at Hollywood Gardens? Gilly shook her head. Inside, she seethed. It was bad enough having to come in to this broken-down old school, but to be behind, to seem dumber than the rest of the kids, to have to appear a fool in front of... Almost half the class was black, and she would look dumb to them. A bunch of... Why don't you bring your chair up to my desk, and we'll work on it? Gilly snatched up her chair and beat Miss Harris to the front of the room. She'd show them. At recess time, Monica Bradley, one of the other white girls in the class, was supposed to look after her on the playground. But Monica was more interested in leaning against a building and talking with her friends, which she did, keeping her back toward Gilly as she giggled and gossiped with two other sixth-grade girls, one of whom was black with millions of tiny braids all over her head, like some African bushwoman. Not that Gilly cared. Why should she? They could giggle their stupid lives away, and she'd never let it bother her. She turned her back on them. That would show them. Just then, a ball jerked loose from the basketball game nearby and rushed toward her. She grabbed it. Balls were friends. She hugged it and ran over to the basket and threw it up. but she had been in too much of a hurry. It kissed the rim, but refused to go in for her. Angrily, she jumped and caught it before it bounced. She was dimly aware of a protest from the players, but they were boys and mostly shorter than she, so not worthy of notice. She shot again, this time with care. It arched and sank cleanly. She pushed someone out of the way and grabbed it, just below the net. "Hey, who do you think you are?" One of the boys, a black as tall as she, tried to pull the ball from her hands. She spun around, knocking him to the concrete, and shot again, banking the ball off the backboard neatly into the net. She grabbed it once more. Now all the boys were after her. She began to run across the playground, laughing and clutching the ball to her chest. She could hear the boys screaming behind her, but she was too fast for them. She ran in and out of hopscotch games and right through a jump rope all the way back to the basketball post, where she shot again, missing wildly in her glee. The boys did not watch for the rebound. They leaped upon her. She was on her back, scratching and kicking for all she was worth. They were yelping like hurt puppies. "Hey, hey, what's going on here?" Miss Harris towered above them. The fighting evaporated under her glare. She marched all seven of them to the principal's office. Gilly noted with satisfaction a long red line down the tall boy's cheek. She'd actually drawn blood in the fracas. The boys looked a lot worse than she felt. 6-1. Pretty good odds, even for the great Gilly Hopkins. Mr. Evans lectured the boys about fighting on the playground and then sent them back to their home rooms. He kept Gilly longer. "Gilly," he said her name as though it were a whole sentence by itself. Then he just sat back in his chair, his fingertips pressed together, and looked at her. She smoothed her hair and waited, staring him in the eye. People hated that, you staring them down as though they were the ones who had been bad. They didn't know how to deal with it. Sure enough, the principal looked away first. "Would you like to sit down?" She jerked her head no. He coughed. "I would rather for us to be friends." Gilly smirked. "We're not going to have fighting on the playground." He looked directly at her. "Or anywhere else around here. I think you need to understand that, Gilly." She tilted her head sassily and kept her eyes right on his. "You're at a new school now. You have a chance to make a new start, if you want to." So Hollywood Gardens had warned him, eh? Well, so what? The people here would have learned soon enough. Gilly would have made sure of that. She smiled what she knew to be her most menacing smile. "If there's any way I can help you, if you just feel like talking to somebody..." "Not one of those understanding adults. Deliver me." She smiled so hard it stretched the muscles around her eyes. "I'm okay," she said. "I don't need any help." "If you don't want help, there's no way I can make you accept it. But, Gilly," he leaned forward in his chair and spoke very slowly and softly, "you're not going to be permitted to hurt other people." She snuffled loudly. "Cute, very cute." He leaned back. She thought she heard him sigh. "Not if I have anything to do with it." Gilly wiped her nose on the back of her hand. She saw the principal half reach for a box of tissues and then pull his hand back. "You may go back to your class now." She turned to go. "I hope you'll give yourself, and us, a chance, Gilly." She ignored the remark. Nice, she thought, climbing the dark stairs. Only a half day and already the principal was yo-yoing. Give her a week, boy. A week and she'd have the whole cussed place in an uproar. But this afternoon, she'd cool it a little. Let them worry. Then tomorrow, or maybe even the next day, wham! She felt her old powers returning. She was no longer tired. Sarsaparilla to Sorcery. She met Agnes Stokes the next day at recess. Agnes was a shriveled-up-looking little sixth grader from another class. She had long red hair that fell rather greasily to her waist, and when she sat it up to Gilly on the playground, the first thing Gilly noticed was how dirty her fingernails were. "I know who you are," the girl said. For a moment, Gilly was reminded of the story of Rumpelstiltskin. Like that little creature, this girl had power over her. She knew who Gilly was, but Gilly didn't know who she was. Yeah, said Gilly, to let the evil little dwarf know she wasn't interested. That was great about you beating up 6 boys yesterday. Yeah? Gilly couldn't help but be a little interested. It's all over the school. So? The girl leaned against a building beside her, as though assuming Gilly would be pleased with her company. So? The girl twitched her freckled nose. I thought me and you should get together. How come? Rumpelstiltskins were always after something. No reason. The smaller girl had on a jacket, the sleeves of which were so long that they came down to her knuckles. She began to roll up first her left sleeve and then her right. She did it slowly and silently, as though it were part of some ceremony. It gave Gilly the creeps. What's your name? Gilly blurted out the question, half expecting the girl to refuse to answer. Agnes Stokes. She lowered her voice conspiratorially. You can call me Ag. Big deal. She was glad when the bell rang and she could leave Agnes Stokes behind. But when she left school that afternoon, Agnes slipped out from the corner of the building and fell in step with her. Want to come over? She asked. My grandma won't care. Can't. Gilly had no intention of going into Agnes Stokes' house until she found out what Agnes Stokes was up to. People like Agnes Stokes didn't try to make friends without a reason. She walked faster, but Agnes kept up with funny little skip steps. When they got all the way up the hill to Trotter's house, Agnes actually started up the walk after Gilly. Gilly turned around fiercely. You can't come in today. How come? Because, said Gilly, I live with a terrible ogre that eats up little red-headed girls in one gulp. Agnes stepped back with a startled look on her face. Oh, she said. Then she giggled nervously. I get it. You're teasing.
Arum golly goshi labu, screamed Gilly, bearing down on the smaller girl like a child-eating giant. Agnes backed away. Whoa. Good. She had succeeded in unsettling Rumpelstiltskin. Maybe tomorrow, said Gilly calmly, and marched into the house without turning around.
That you, William Ernest, honey? It made her want to puke the way Trotter carried on over that little weirdo. Trotter came into the hall. Oh, Gilly, she said. You got home so quick today, I thought it was William Ernest. Yeah, Gilly started past her up the stairs. Wait a minute, honey. You got some mail.
Mail?
It could only be from... And it was. She snatched it out of Trotter's puffy fingers and raced up the stairs, slamming the door and falling upon the bed in one motion. It was a postcard showing sunset on the ocean. Slowly, she turned it over. My dearest Galadriel, the agency wrote me that you had moved. I wish it were to hear. I miss you. All my love, Courtney. That was all. Gilly read it again, and then a third time. No, that was not all. Up on the address side in the left-hand corner, the letters were squeezed together so you could hardly read them. An address, her mother's address. She could go there. She could hitchhike across the country to California. She would knock on the door and her mother would open it. And Courtney would throw her arms around her and kiss her all over her face and never let her go. I wish it were to hear. I miss you. See, Courtney wanted her to come. All my love. Inside her head, Gilly packed the brown suitcase and crept down the stairs. It was the middle of the night. Out into the darkness. No. She shivered a little. She would pick a time when Trotter was fussing over W.E. or Mr. Randolph. She'd steal some food, maybe a little money. People picked up hitchhikers all the time. She'd get to California in a few days, probably less than a week. People were always picking up hitchhikers and beating them up and killing them and pitching their dead bodies into the woods, all because she didn't have any money to buy a plane ticket or even a bus ticket. Oh, why did it have to be so hard? Other kids could be with their mothers all the time. Dumb, stupid kids who didn't even like their mothers much. While she put her head down and began to cry. She didn't mean to, but it was so unfair. She hadn't even seen her mother since she was 3 years old.
her beautiful mother, who missed her so much and sent her all her love. "You all right, honey?" Tap, tap, tap. "You all right?" Gilly sat up straight. "Couldn't anyone have some privacy around this dump?" She stuffed the postcard under her pillow and then smoothed the covers that she refused to straighten before school. She stood up at the end of the bed like a soldier on inspection, but the door didn't open. "Anything I can do for you, honey?" "Yeah, fry yourself, lardface." "Can I come in?" "No," shrieked Gilly, then snatched open the door. "Can you leave me alone for one stupid minute?" Trotter's eyelids flapped on her face like shutters on a vacant house. "You okay, honey?" she repeated. "I will be as soon as you get your fat self out of here." "Okay." Trotter backed up slowly toward the stairs. "Call me if you want anything." As an afterthought, she said, "It ain't a shameful thing to need help, you know." "I don't need any help." Gilly slammed the door, then yanked it open. "From anybody." She slammed it shut once more. "I miss you. All my love. I don't need help from anybody except from you. If I wrote you, if I asked, would you come and get me? You're the only one in the world I need. I'll be good for you. You'll see. I'd change into a whole new person. I'd turn from gruesome Gilly into gorgeous, gracious, good, glorious Galadriel. And grateful. Oh, Courtney, oh, Mother, I'd be so grateful. Lord, you are so good to us," Mr. Randall was saying the supper blessing. "Yes, Lord, so very good. We have this wonderful food to eat and wonderful friends to enjoy it with. Now, bless us, Lord, and make us truly, truly grateful. Amen." "Amen. My, Mr. Randolph, you do ask a proper blessing. Oh, Mrs. Trotter, when I sit before the spread of your table, I got so much to be thankful for." "Good Lord, how is a person supposed to eat through this garbage?" "Well, Miss Gilly, how was school for you today?" Gilly grunted. Trotter gave her a sharp look. "It was okay, I guess." "My, you young people have such a wonderful opportunity today. Back when I was going to school..." "Oh, thank you, Mrs. Trotter. What a delicious smelling plate. My, my." To Gilly's relief, the blind man's attention was diverted from his tale of childhood school days to the organization of the food on his plate and the eating of it, which he did with a constant murmuring of delight, dropping little bits from his mouth to his chin or tie. "Disgusting." Gilly switched her attention to William Ernest, who, as usual, was staring at her bug-eyed. She smiled primly and mouthed, "How do you do, Sweetums?" Sweetums immediately choked on a carrot. He coughed until tears came. "What's the matter, William Ernest, honey?" "I think," Gilly smiled her old lady principal smile, "the dear child is choking. It must be something he ate." "Are you all right, baby?" asked Trotter. W.E. nodded through his tears. "Sure. Maybe he needs a little pat on the back," Mr. Randall offered. "Yeah," said Gilly. "How about it, W.E., old man? Want me to swat you one?" "No, don't let her hit me." "Nobody's going to hit you, honey. Everybody just wants to help." Trotter looked hard at Gilly. "Right, Gilly?" "Just want to help, little buddy." Gilly flashed her crooked politician smile. "I'm all right," the boy said in a small, strangled voice. He slid his chair a couple of inches toward Trotter's end of the table, so that he was no longer directly across from Gilly. "Say, W.E.," Gilly flashed her teeth at him, "how about you and me doing a little red-hot reading after supper? You know, squeeze the old orange reader?" W.E. shook his head, his eyes pleading with Trotter to save him. "My, my, my, Mrs. Trotter, I can tell how old I am when I can't even understand the language of the young people about me," said Mr. Randolph. Trotter was looking first at W.E. and then at Gilly. "Don't you fret yourself, Mr. Randolph." She leaned across the corner of the table and patted William Ernest gently, keeping her eyes on Gilly. "Don't you fret now. Sometimes these kids will tease the buttons off a teddy bear. Ain't nothing to do with age." "Hell, I was just trying to help the kid," muttered Gilly. "He don't always know that," Trotter said, but her eyes were saying, "Like heck you were." "I got a real good idea," she went on. "They tell me, Gilly, that you are some kind of a great reader yourself. I know Mr. Randolph would like to hear you read something. The little wrinkled face brightened. My, my, would you do that, Miss Gilly? It would be such a pleasure to me. Trotta, you rat. I don't have anything to read, Gilly said. Okay, that ain't a problem. Mr. Randolph's got enough books to start a public library, haven't you, Mr. Randolph? Well, I do have a few, he chuckled. Course, you've got the good book right here. What good book? Demanded Gilly, interested in spite of herself. She did like a good book. I believe Mr. Randolph is referring to the Holy Bible. The Bible? Gilly didn't know whether to laugh or cry. She had a vision of herself trapped forever in the dusty brown parlor, reading the Bible to Trotter and Mr. Randolph. She would read on and on forever, while the two of them nodded piously at each other. She jumped up from her chair. I'll get a book, she said. I'll run over to Mr. Randolph's and choose something. She was afraid they would try to stop her, force her to read the Bible, but they both seemed pleased and let her go. Mr. Randolph's front door was unlocked. The house was pitch black and mustier than Trotter's. Quickly, Gilly pushed a light switch. Nothing happened. Of course, why should Mr. Randolph care if a bowl burned out? She stumbled from the hall to where she thought the living room should be, fumbling along the wall with her fingers until she found another switch. To her relief, this one worked. Only 40 watts worth, maybe, but still there was light. Leaning against two walls of the crowded little room were huge antique bookcases that reached the ceiling, and stacked or lying upside down, even put in backwards, were books, hundreds of them. They looked old and thick with dust. It was hard to think of funny little Mr. Randolph actually reading them. She wondered how long he had been blind. She wished she could push her mind past those blank white eyes into whatever of Mr. Randolph all these books must represent. She went toward the larger shelf to the right of the door, but she felt strangely shy about actually touching the books. It was almost as though she were meddling in another person's brain. Wait, maybe they were all for show. Maybe Mr. Randolph collected books, trying to act like some big-shot genius, even though he himself couldn't read a word. No one would ever catch on. They'd think he didn't read because he couldn't see. That was it, of course. She felt better. Now she was free to look at the books themselves. Without thinking, she began to straighten out the shelves as she read the titles. She saw several volumes of an encyclopedia set, Antarctica to Balfe, then Juarez to Liberty. She looked around for other volumes. It bothered her to have everything in a muddle. High on the top shelf was Sarsaparilla to Sorcery. She dragged a heavy stuffed chair backward to the shelf and climbed up on the very top of its back. On tiptoe, leaning against the rickety lower shelves to keep from toppling, she could barely reach the book. She pulled at it with the tip of her fingers, catching it as it fell. Something fluttered to the floor as she did so. Money! She half fell, half jumped off the chair and snatched it up. Two $5 bills had fallen out from behind Sarsaparilla to Sorcery. She put the encyclopedia down and studied the old wrinkled bills, just when she was needing money so badly. Here they'd come floating down, like magic. $10 wouldn't get her very far, but there might be more where these came from. She climbed up again, stretching almost to the point of falling, but it was no good. Although she could just about reach the top shelf with her fingertips, she was very unsteady, and the lower shelves were much too wobbly to risk climbing. Heavy footsteps thudded across the front porch. The front door opened. You all right, Gilly, honey? Gilly nearly tipped her over herself, leaping down and grabbing up Sarsaparilla to Sorcery from the chair seat, stretching her guts out to tip the book into its place on the shelf. And just in time. She got down on the chair seat as Trotter appeared at the door. You was taking so long, she said. Then Mr. Randolph remembered that maybe the bulbs were all burned out. He tends to forget since they really don't help him much. There's a light here, Gilly snapped. If there hadn't been, I'd have come back. I'm not retarded. I believe you mentioned that before, said Trotter dryly. Well, you find anything you wanted to read to Mr. Randolph? It's a bunch of junk. One man's trash is another man's treasure, Trotter said in a maddeningly calm voice, wandering over to a lower shelf as she did so. She pulled out a squat, leather-bound volume and blew the dust off the top. He's got a yen for poetry, Mr. Randolph does. She handed the book up to Gilly, who was still perched on the chair. This is one I used to try to read to him last year, but, her voice sounded almost shy, I ain't too hot a reader myself, as you can probably guess. Gilly stepped down. She was still angry with Trotter for bursting in on her, but she was curious to know just what sort of poetry old man Randolph fancied. The Oxford Book of English Verse. She flipped it open, but it was too dark to see the words properly. Ready to come along? Yeah, yeah, she replied impatiently. Holding her neck straight to keep from looking up at Sarsaparilla, she followed Trotter's bulk back to her house. What did you bring? Mr. Randall's face looked like a child's before a wrapped-up present. He was sitting right at the edge of the big brown chair. The Oxford Book of English Verse, Gilly mumbled. He cocked his head. I beg your pardon? The poems we was reading last year, Mr. Randolph. Trotter had raised her voice, as she always did, speaking to the old man. Oh, good, good, he said, sliding back into the chair until his short legs no longer touched the worn rug. Gilly opened the book. She flipped through the junk at the beginning and came to the first poem. Cuckoo Song, she read the title loudly. It was rather pleasant being able to do something well that none of the rest of them could. Then she glanced at the body of the poem. Summer is Eichumen Inn. Lob sing cuckoo. Goret said and bloweth med, and springeth the wood new sing cuckoo. Cuckoo was right. Wait a minute, she muttered, turning the page. By tune Mercy Aunt Arabelle. She looked quickly at the next. Lentums, why come with love to tune. And the next. It caught a bird in Berberat, that fully seemly is on sut. She slammed the book shut. They were obviously trying to play a trick on her. Make her seem stupid. See? There was Mr. Randolph giggling to himself. It's not in English, she yelled. You're just trying to make a fool of me. No, no, Miss Gilly, nobody's trying to make a fool of you. The real old English is at the front. Try over away. You want the Wadsworth one, Mr. Randall? Asked Trotter. Or do you have that by heart? Both, he said happily. Trotter came over and leaned across Gilly, who was sitting on the piano bench. I can find it, said Gilly, pulling the book out of her reach. Just tell me the name of it. William Wordsworth, said Mr. Randolph. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, he folded his small hands across his chest, his voice no longer pinched and polite, but soft and warm. Gilly found the page and began to read. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth and every common sight, to me did seem, a parallel in celestial light, the glory and the freshness of a dream. She stopped a minute as though to listen to her own echo. It is not now, Mr. Randolph's velvet voice prompted her. It is not now as it hath been of yore. Turn wheresoever I may, by night or day. Leaning against the back of the chair, Mr. Randolph joined, and with one voice they recited, The things which I have seen I now can see no more. They continued to read that way. He would listen blissfully for a while and then join, turning her single voice into the sound of a choir. She read, Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness and not in utter nakedness. And then together, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. Trailing clouds of glory do we come. The music of the words rolled up and burst across Gilly like waves upon a beach. It was a long poem, 7 pages or so of small print. She couldn't understand really what it meant. But Mr. Randolph seemed to know each word, prompting her gently if she started to stumble on an unfamiliar one, and joining her, powerfully and musically on his own favorite lines. They chorused the final lines. Thanks to the human heart by which we live, thanks to his tenderness, its joys and fears, to me the meanest flower that blows can give, thoughts that do often lie too deep for tears. Mr. Randolph gave a long sigh. Thank you. Thank you, he said softly. She's a handsome reader, all right. Trotter was smiling proudly as though she might share the credit for Gilly's talent. The smile irritated Gilly. She was a good reader because she had set her mind to be one. The minute that damn first grade teacher had told Mrs. Dixon that she was afraid Gilly might be slow, Gilly had determined to make the old parrot choke on her crackers. And she had. By Christmas time, she was reading circles around the whole snotty class. Not that it made any difference. The teacher, Mrs. Gorman, had then explained very carefully to Mrs. Dixon that she had 25 other children to look out for and that there was no way to set up a private reading time for one individual. Gilly would just have to learn some patience and cooperation. That was all. Well, what do you think of Mr. Wordsworth, Miss Gilly? Asked Mr. Randolph, interrupting her angry thoughts. Stupid, she said to the memory of Mrs. Gorman rather than to him. A look of pain crossed his face. I suppose, he said in his pinched, polite voice, in just one reading, one might... Like here, Gilly now felt forced to justify an opinion which she didn't in the least hold. Like here at the end, the meanest flower that blows? What in the hell? What's that supposed to mean? Whoever heard of a mean flower? Mr. Randolph relaxed. The word mean has more than one definition, Miss Gilly. Here the poet is talking about humility, lowliness, not, he laughed softly, not bad nature. Gilly flushed. I never saw a flower blow either. Dandelions! They all turned to look at William Ernest, not only startled by the seldom heard sound of his voice, but by the fact that all three had forgotten that he was even in the room. There he sat, cross-legged on the floor at the end of the couch, a nearsighted guru, blinking behind his glasses. You hear that? Trotter's voice boomed with triumph. Dandelions! Ain't that the smartest thing you ever heard? Ain't it? W.E. ducked his head behind the cover of the couch arm. That is probably exactly the flower that Mr. Wordsworth meant, Mr. Randolph said. Surely it is the lowliest flower of all. Meanest flower there is, agreed Trotter happily. And they sure do blow, just like William Ernest says. They blow all over the place. She turned toward Gilly as though for agreement, but at the sight of Gilly's face, the woman's smile stuck. Can I go now? Gilly's voice was sharp like the jagged edge of a tin can top. Trotter nodded. Sure, she said quietly. I do appreciate more than you know. But Gilly didn't wait to hear Mr. Randolph's appreciation. She ran up the stairs into her room. Behind the closed door, she pulled the two bills from her pocket and, lying on the bed, smoothed out the wrinkles. She would hide them beneath her underwear until she could figure out a better place, and tomorrow she would call the bus station and ask the price of a one-way ticket to San Francisco. I'm coming, Courtney, she whispered, trailing clouds of glory as I come. It was only a matter of getting back into Mr. Randolph's house and getting the rest of the money. There was sure to be more. William Ernest and Other Mean Flowers. Agnes Stokes was waiting outside when she started for school the next morning. Gilly's first impulse was to turn around and go back into the house until Agnes had left, but it was too late. Agnes was already waving and yelling to her. What a creep! Gilly walked past her quickly without speaking. She could hear Agnes's little scurrying steps behind her. Then there was a dirty hand on her arm. Disgusted, Gilly shook it off. Agnes's hand was gone, but she hooked her chin over Gilly's upper arm. Her face twisted up to look at Gilly in the face. Her breath smelled. What are we going to do today? She asked. We? Are you kidding? Want to fight the boys again? I'll help. Gilly spun around and brought her nose down close to Agnes's stubby one. Ugh. When are you going to get it through that ant brain of yours that I don't want help? Agnes withdrew her nose and shook her greasy hair, but to Gilly's annoyance she clung like a louse nit, scurrying beside Gilly, two or three little steps to every one of Gilly's. Though it was hard to ignore her the rest of the way to the school, Gilly managed by putting on her celebrity in a parade face, staring glassy-eyed far into the crowd, blanking out everything within close range. "I just live up the next block from you, you know. Thrillsville. I'll stop by for you every day, okay?" The little jerk couldn't even figure out that she was being ignored. Just as they reached the schoolyard, Agnes waved a large, unwrapped piece of gum before Gilly's nose. "Want some bubble gum?" Oh, what the heck. The queen has used Rumpelstiltskin, hadn't she? Agnes might come in handy someday. The trick was in knowing how to dispose of people when you were through with them. Gilly had had plenty of practice performing that trick. She took the gum without speaking. Agnes flushed with pleasure. "See that kid over by the fence? The one with the big nose? Her mother ran away with a sailor last May. So?" Agnes put her hand up and whispered behind it. "My grandma says the whole family's nothing but trash." "Yeah?" Gilly smacked her gum noisily. "What's your grandma say about your family?" Agnes went as stiff as a dried sponge. "Who's been telling lies about my family?" "Lucky guess." "They're coming back, both of them." "Sure." "Well, they are, probably before Christmas." "Okay, okay, I believe you." Agnes's eyes darted back and forth in their sockets, studying Gilly's expressionless face. "Are you making fun of me?" she asked finally. "I wouldn't do that." Agnes's uncertainty wavered. "I know a lot more stuff," she said. "You know, junk about people around here." "I bet you do, sweetheart." Gilly carefully blew a medium-sized bubble, which popped dangerously close to Agnes's stringy red hair. Agnes let out a sharp little laugh. "Watch it," she said nervously. The first bell rang. "See you at recess." Gilly shrugged and headed for Harris 6. "Maybe," she said. Although a part of Gilly's head wanted to get on with her schemes of how to get Mr. Randolph's money, once she crossed the threshold of Harris 6, she forced herself to concentrate on her lessons. She had made up her mind that first day to pay attention in Miss Harris's class. She wasn't going to let a bunch of low-class idiots think they were smarter than she was. It was infuriating to find herself behind in almost every subject, but she knew that the fault lay in Hollywood Gardens Elementary and not in herself. She would work madly until she had not only caught up, but passed them all, and then she'd skip to a total halt. That kind of technique drove teachers wild. They took it personally when someone who could obviously run circles around the rest of the class completely refused to play the game. Yep, and in Miss Harris's case, that was just how Gilly wanted it taken. At lunchtime, Agnes's class had gotten to the cafeteria first, so when Gilly left the line, Agnes was already seated and waved her over to the table. Gilly would have preferred to eat alone. Agnes wasn't the most appetizing luncheon companion, but since Gilly had decided Agnes might sometime come in handy, she might as well get used to her. She went over and sat down opposite Agnes, who smiled like a cartoon cat across the trays. "I get free lunch, too," she said. Gilly stared at her. Nobody was supposed to know who got free lunch and who didn't. So much for privacy. The first thing she was going to teach Agnes Stokes was when to keep her big mouth shut. "You know, don't you, Agnes? It makes me sick just looking at you." Agnes gave her kick-dog expression. "What you mean?" "Nothing personal. You just make me sick, that's all." Agnes jerked the cafeteria bench closer to the table and started to roll up her dragging shirt sleeves. "It's nothing personal," Gilly continued. "In fact, you probably can't help it. I don't blame you. I'm just not going to put up with it." "Put up with what?" Gilly leaned way across the table and right into Agnes's pink face. "Your big mouth." Agnes tilted backward to get her face out of Gilly's leering one. People were staring at them. They both straightened up, but Gilly kept the leer in place. "I ain't got no big mouth," Agnes said quietly. "Then shut it up. We wouldn't want what's left of your brains to trickle out." Agnes's mouth flew open and immediately slammed shut. She shrugged, gave an angry little sniff, and then began to eat her lunch. Gilly paused to give a generous smile to the other people at the table while spreading her napkin delicately on her lap and picking up the milk carton with her pinky curled the way Mrs. Nevins used to do when she picked up her coffee cup. After lunch, she allowed Agnes to follow her around the playground like a stray puppy. Once Agnes ventured a tentative, "Hey, Gil," but Gilly spun around with such a frightening look that any further words withered. And when Gilly left school, Agnes fell in behind her without a word. They marched up the hill, Agnes tripping along double time to keep up with Gilly's exaggerated strides. When they got to Trotter's, Gilly went in. As she was closing the dirty white picket gate behind her, Agnes touched her arm and handed her a note. It said, "When can I talk?" Gilly smiled benignly. "We'll see," she said. "We'll just see how it goes." Agnes opened her mouth like a starved baby bird, but she didn't give a chirp. "Good bird." Gilly patted the skinny, freckled arm and swept up the walk into the house, leaving the open-mouthed fledgling outside the gate. "That you, William Ernest, honey?" "That's me, Mamie Trotter baby," squeaked Gilly. From the kitchen, she could hear Trotter's laugh rumbling. "Come on in here and get yourself a snack, Gilly, honey." Gilly was tempted, but determined not to yield. She was too smart to be bought with food, no matter how hungry she felt. She stomped up the stairs past the open kitchen door, from which came the definite smell of chocolate chip cookies. "Double damn you, Mamie Trotter." Later, behind her carefully closed door, Gilly took out the money from the bureau. Then she pulled out the whole drawer and dumped it upside down on the bed. She smoothed out the bills on the drawer bottom and then took from her pocket the masking tape she had taken care to steal from Miss Harris's desk and taped the bills to the bottom of the drawer. Without warning, the door flew open. Gilly, to cover the money, fell chest down over the drawer. A frog-eyed William Ernest stood on the threshold, trying to juggle a small tray which held a plate of cookies and a glass of milk. "What in the devil?" screeched Gilly. "Trotter," was all the child could manage in the way of an answer. He was rattling the tray so hard that the milk glass was threatening to jump the edge. "Well, put him down, stupid." W.E.'s eyes searched the room in desperation. Gilly was beginning to feel like a fool lying chest down on a bureau drawer. She raised herself enough to turn the drawer over. Then she sat up and turned to face him. "Didn't Trotter ever tell you about knocking before you burst in?" He nodded, eyes wide, tray rattling. She sighed. "What a weird little kid." "Okay," she said, reaching out across the narrow space. "Give it here." He shoved it at her and ran blamity-blam down the stairs. Gilly turned the drawer back over to make a table on her bed and put the milk and cookies on it. She shut the door and then sat down cross-legged on the bed and began to eat. "Oh, thank you, Mamie Trotter. What a delicious-smelling plate of cookies. My, my, and amen." In the middle of the last cookie, an inspiration came to her. It wasn't Agnes Stokes who she could use. Agnes Stokes couldn't be trusted between freckles. It was William Ernest. Of course, Trotter's honey baby engaged in a life of crime. She laughed out loud at the pleasure of it. Babyface Teague, the frog-eyed flitcher, wide-eyed William, the goose-brained godfather. The possibilities were unlimited and delectable. The midget of the mafia, the orange reader squeezer. No, the orange squirt. She jumped up and put the room to order, danced on the stairs, balancing the tray high on one hand, and skipped into the kitchen. Trotter looked up from the table where she was spooning cookie dough onto a baking sheet and gave her the eye. "Feeling good now?" Gilly gave her the 300-watt smile that she had designed especially for melting the hearts of foster parents. Never better. She spoke the words with just the right musical lilt. She put the dishes by the sink, started to wash them, but thought better of it. Trotter might get suspicious if goodness was overdone. She skated out into the hall and around the bottom of the stairs, right into the living room where W.E. sat on the floor staring at Sesame Street. She slid down beside him, and when his eyes checked her out sideways, she gave a quiet, sisterly kind of smile and pretended to be enthralled with Big Bird. She said nothing through Sesame Street Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and the Electric Company, but occasionally hummed along with one of the songs in a friendly sort of way, never failing to smile at William when she caught him snatching a quick stare in her direction. Her strategy seemed to be succeeding. At any rate, when supper time neared, she said to him, "Do you want to set the table or get Mr. Randolph?" And he answered with hardly a stutter, "Get Mr. Randolph." So she set the kitchen table, humming under her breath the Sunny Days theme from Sesame Street. And after supper, she folded an airplane for him from notebook paper. And at her suggestion, he even followed her out onto the front porch to fly it. W.E. squinted his little nearsighted eyes together, wrinkled up his stubby nose, drew his arm way back, and pitched the airplane with all his might. "Pow!" he whispered. The plane swooped down off the porch, then suddenly caught an updraft and climbed higher than their heads, looped and glided smoothly to the grass. He turned shining eyes on her. "See that?" he asked softly. "See that?" "Okay, okay." Gilly ran out and picked up the plane. It was the best she'd ever made. She clambered up onto the concrete post that held the porch railing in place and raised her arm. Then she thought better of it. "You do it, William Ernest, okay?" She climbed down and gave him a boost up. He seemed a little unsteady from the height of the post, glancing down, apparently afraid to move his feet. "Look, I'm not going to let you fall, man." She put her hands loosely around his ankles. She could feel him relaxing under her fingers. He reared back and shot. "Pow!" he said a little louder than before, sending the white craft with its pale blue lines as high, well, almost as high, as the house, looping, climbing, gliding, resting at last in the azalea bush in Mr. Randolph's yard. William Ernest scrambled off the post and down the steps. He was slowed by the fence, but not stopped. You could tell he'd never climbed a fence in his life, and it would have been faster by far to go through the gate and around, but he had chosen the most direct route to his precious plane. He fell in Mr. Randolph's yard in such a way that one arm and leg seemed to arrive before the other pair, but he picked himself up at once and delicately plucked his prize from the bush. He turned around to grin shyly at Gilly, and then, as though carrying the crown of England, came down Mr. Randolph's walk, the sidewalk, and into Trotter's Gate. About halfway up the walk, he said something. "What did you say?" Gilly asked. "I say..." The veins on his neck stuck out with the effort of raising his voice to an audible level. "I say, it sure fly good." He wasn't as dumb as he looked now, was he? Thought Gilly, smiling, without taking time to calculate which of her smiles to put on. "You throw good, too, will you, me?"
"I do?"
"Sure. I was just admiring your style. I guess you've had lessons." He cocked his head in puzzlement. "No? You just taught yourself?" He nodded his head solemnly. "Geez, man, you're a natural. I've never seen such a natural." He straightened his thin shoulders and marched up the stairs as though he were the President of the United States. They were still flying the plane, or rather W.E. was flying it with Gilly looking on and making admiring remarks from time to time, when Trotter and Mr. Randolph came out on the porch. "You gotta see this, Trotter. William Ernest can do this really good." W.E. climbed unassisted to the top of the concrete post. He didn't need Gilly's hands or help now. "Watch," he said softly. "Watch here." Mr. Randolph lifted his sightless face upward. "What is it, son?" "Gilly made him a paper airplane, looks like," interpreted Trotter. "Oh, I see, I see." "Watch now." "We're watching, William Ernest, honey." W.E. leaned back and let fly. Pow! For another swooping, soaring, slowly spiraling, skimming superflight. Trotter sighed as the plane gracefully landed by the curb. William Ernest rushed to retrieve it. "How was it?" Mr. Randolph asked. "I clare, Mr. Randolph, sometimes it's a pity you gotta miss seeing things. I never thought paper airplanes was for anything but to drive teachers crazy before." She turned to Gilly. "That was really something," she said. Gilly could feel herself blushing, but W.E. came up the steps and saved her. "It's 'cause I fly it so good," he said. "Yeah," said Gilly, patting his shoulder. "You sure do." He looked up into her face, his squinty little eyes full of pure delight. Thank you, said Trotter softly. For a moment, Gilly looked at her, then quickly turned away as a person turns from bright sunlight. Want me to walk Mr. Randolph home? She asked. Thank you, Miss Gilly. I would appreciate that so much. She took his elbow and guided him carefully down the stairs, taking care not to look back over her shoulder, because the look on Trotter's face was the one Gilly had, in some deep part of her, longed to see all her life, but not from someone like Trotter. That was not part of the plan.